Hey everyone, thanks for coming out to the Ogilvy Day Stage. We're very excited to welcome our next presenter, John LeBlanc, author of Programming Social Applications. John's an Emmy Award-winning software engineer and also serves on the Open Social Foundation board. His talk today is going to focus on the successes and failures of online relationship and sharing models, a very timely topic. Please welcome John.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. My name is Jonathan LeBlanc, and I'm a developer, evangelist, and author of Programming Social Applications. Now, when I was prepping for this talk, I saw a book reading, and it's a technology book, and thought I wouldn't bore you guys with 20 minutes of live coding or me showing you code from the book or reading the code. That would be incredibly boring for me as well. So instead, what I wanted to do is really talk about the underpinnings of what the book is all about. What social application and network development is all about. And what that comes down to is simply human identity. The simple facts that not everything's a technology solution, that you have basic sociological and biological elements that have to be put into every social application that you develop. Because it's so very important to understand how human beings work. And to that regard, the topics that I'm going to be covering very shortly are about that, about human identity and how we work, the types of users that you're going to encounter, and how you should work with them. Then, how to take core human identity and extend it in new, in just vastly different ways by building in social groups and applying sociology principles like tribalism to the online world and to application development, really tying in some core fundamentals of what makes us us. And finally, I'm just going to take a look at some companies that have really pushed the boundaries of identity development into new and interesting ways, but have failed in some core details. So that's going to be a fun little talk. I love going through that stuff. So let's start out by talking a little bit about the foundations for human identity and how it applies to social application development. First, the users that you're going to encounter are very many, but they generally fall into two categories. Your anonymous users, definitely your largest audience. Your largest number of people are going to be these anonymous people that come to your application and you know nothing about them. How do you track information about them? How do you drive some value? And ideally, what you want to do is make the login process, the act of turning them into a logged-in user, simple. And that's done through using accounts that they already have, through technologies like OAuth, OpenID. I mean, there's countless different systems out there that you can leverage off of. So then, obviously, the other user type is going to be those people who are already known to you, people that are already drilled into your system that you have an identifier for, that you can start driving value for. These are the people that you should be tracking what they're looking at, what they're doing, how long they're doing it for, and really understanding what their interests are and personalizing the experience for them. That is so vastly important, but unfortunately, almost every company out there stops at the authentication step, the login step. The way I like to put it is that login is simply a door to the house of your identity. All these little rooms, all these little intricacies of that house is your core identity. And that's why you need to never stop at the login step. There's so much more you can learn from people. So let's start by taking a look at anonymous users. They are a tricky bunch because, really, how are you going to track and drive value from people who are unknown to you? Well, traditionally, there are a couple of different methods for doing that. There's things that, just ways of driving some value or tracking some basic information about them before you roll them over into registered users. Good old-fashioned way is dropping a tracking cookie onto their machines. Just start tracking information like the URLs they're going to. You know a lot about what your site contents are, your application contents are. You know the content of the page. Why aren't you driving it back to the user? Why aren't you storing that information on their machine so that when they register, You can automatically personalize their experience for who they are. Just imagine how comfortable they would feel once they get to the point of registering and, hey, the site's already personalized for me because I've already looked at it for a week. And thankfully, because tracking cookies are ridiculously small and can't store very much information, emerging standards like HTML5 have really given us a good benefit here. We can do key value storage in a much larger scale. We can provide much more information and gather much more detail about people and automatically categorize them based on those simple details. So the other type of user that you're going to encounter is definitely your real users, the users who are known to you, the users that you can track information about. But really, when you log in users and you pick the login structure, hopefully some open source system, like what a lot of what's covered in this book, like OAuth, OpenID, logging with Facebook, logging in with Google, with Yahoo, with GitHub. I mean, all of these have two basic principles behind them and two basic sources. So the first and foremost source, the biggest one that you're going to leverage off of, is a social or perceived identity. Now, think of this like a Facebook. And I call it perceived identity because, let's give you an example. Let's say I go to several of the lovely parties here at South by Southwest, and I take some lovely photos. Now, unfortunately, maybe some of these might have me with a drink in my hand. And I have my boss's bosses, my family, my friends on there, and maybe some of them I don't want to show that information to, so I start stripping out those photos and don't upload those photos. I start stripping out pieces of my identity and what makes me me, what I have done, what I'm interested in. Maybe I have political views that I want to share with some of my friends, that I want to engage with some of my like-minded friends about. But maybe some other friends that I have don't share those same opinions, and I don't want to alienate them. So I keep those opinions to myself. I don't share them. Stripping away layers of identity and showing people or having people perceive me in a different way is all the basis of the social identity. So Facebook, Google, Yahoo, it's all social identity because it's curated by the users. The users change their own content. Now, the best part here is that you have social reach. Now, these social channels have amazing opportunities for really pushing user information and pushing posts and having people act on your posts. So that's really the benefit here. But if you have, let's say, a marketplace or you're selling goods where you don't really need this information, that's where something like concrete identity comes into play. Systems like PayPal Access that are built off of OAuth and OpenID, they're leveraging off of an identity profile in your PayPal account. So what's the difference? Well, PayPal itself is verified identity. You input information like your shipping address, billing address, gender, name, all this stuff that you might find on a driver's license. And then they go ahead and verify that information. From that point on, everything that they're tracking is about what you're buying and what you're doing. It's not curated content. It's verified content. So that becomes a concrete identity profile. Now, unfortunately, the social reach isn't there. That's why you have to leverage off of social channels. So those are really the two types of identity profiles that you're going to be leveraging off of in some fashion or another. So let's drive into how to extend identity. And that's really around social grouping. I love this topic because I read this one book maybe a couple months ago. I had studied identity for 5 years and done technology implementations all over the place, both proprietary and open. But I started reading this one book called Us and Them. It was the science of identity. And in taking away the technology angle from identity, I started to understand topics like social grouping and tribalism and how human beings naturally, innately build groups for themselves. And to that regard, I started really understanding identity in new, interesting ways and understanding that it's not just a technology solution, that it's primarily all about human beings. The concepts of social grouping are not a new thing. They've been around since the dawn of humanity. I mean, this is a way that we would group ourselves based on shared likenesses, shared languages, how we know people would react. And that's the underpinnings of the tribalism concept, building tribes based on simple things. And it started out as a way to keep us safe. We would naturally group ourselves in ways that we were felt comfortable with, that we knew that people would act in certain ways. So this is how the basis of social grouping started. Now, unfortunately, prejudice came into play. And it's led to some horrible, despicable things in our history. Genocide, racial and gender segregation, horrible aspects in our history. But the core of tribalism is still the same, that minus the prejudice, minus this horrible aspect, we're still social beings. And we innately socially group ourselves based on these basic principles. You know, and this is really what's driving the book, is understanding identity and how it really works in regards to a technology solution, in an implementation solution. And one of the great things is that when taking tribalism concepts and social grouping concepts online, thankfully due to web anonymity and the ability for you to be whoever you want to be, the same concepts that plague us offline don't plague us online. And that's because of differences in the social graph. So naturally, in our social instances, when we work with people, we naturally bucket people. We will put together a business bucket, we'll put together a friends bucket, a family bucket, whatever bucket naturally happens. But we don't do this manually. I don't say, you're in my friend bucket, and, ooh, I'm sorry, you didn't make the friend cuts, you're my acquaintance bucket, though. We don't do this. We naturally group people into likenesses, into what groups us, like location or business relationships, and relationships change. So this naturally happens in our society. Now, in the online world, we're all connected and we're all equal. CEOs can communicate directly with customers on the same level. Music stars with their fan bases all at the same level. Now, this is a wonderful thing, but it kind of whitewashes the entire idea of social grouping because you start out with nothing. And this is why social grouping is so very important for everything you do around identity, because you need to build these relationships in order to get any sort of value out of your users. So the typical groups that you're going to encounter online, there's three basic ones that you're going to be grouping people under. So first and foremost, you have a follower type. Think of this like Twitter. I follow you because I'm interested in your content, or I'm interested in you as a human being. Now, that might not be reciprocated, so it's definitely a one-way connection. It's all about mass public broadcasting, reaching the most amount of people. But you might not get all the same value out of it because these people might be completely unknown to you. No, and it's nothing like the connection type. This is like Facebook. I say, you're my friend, and you say, yes, you're my friend too. Let's be friends. Now, naturally, this usually has some sort of connection in the real world. You're naturally you're manually grouping based on your friendships. You might have some sort of relationship with those people, so it's the beginning of these type of groupings. Now, the size of these groups might be small, but they're so incredibly valuable because you have these relationships, these core understandings about these people that you're working with, and they want to communicate with you. They want to share with you. So this is where really a lot of social value comes from. And the third type is the group type. At a very base level, this is something like Google Circles. They are mimicking the functionality of how we innately group ourselves in a manual way through Google Circles. I can have my JavaScript group, I can have my friends group, my family group, whatever group I want. Now, unfortunately, this is really just a novelty because relationships change. I might change jobs one day. I might have a completely different career path. My family might change. My friends might change. things about my identity might change, and curating all that content over and over again is just tedious and useless. So the ways that you really drive value out of social grouping is by doing it automatically, doing it based on what the user's actually doing off of their true, real identity. And that's where social data miners are becoming the new rock stars of the industry. People who can take massive amounts of data that we're inundated with every day and draw some value from it and really build identity profiles that are meaningful and lasting and automatic, because that's how we work as a species. So let's take a look at the best part, which is taking a look at companies who have implemented these extensions of identity and really tried to drive value out of social grouping and out of social constructs. First, let's go back a couple years and start with Google Buzz. I promise you I'm not picking on Google for any particular reason. Love Google. But the products really showcase some core pieces here. Now, the premise behind Google Buzz was really just massive public sharing of content. And the more the people that you communicated with the most would get more ability to see your shared items. Now, this, from a technology standpoint, makes absolutely perfect sense. But identity is not just about technology. Identity has to be about more than just a simple implementation. And that's what happened here. Harriet Jacobs had posted something about Google Buzz and on her blog, and it got reprinted at Gizmodo and a couple of other news sources. Now, what happened was the two people that she was communicating with the most were her boyfriend and her mother. Seems logical, no problem, sharing more information, right? Unfortunately, that third person that she was sharing with and that got a ton of access to her information was her abusive ex-husband. So think about this for a minute. All the information that you might be sharing through Google, what you're doing, where you're going, what you're reading, where you are, all shared to someone who might have a desire to harm you. It becomes a personal safety issue. And this is why an understanding of how we work as human beings and crossing those lines is so important. You have to have a social conscience. Now let's go to something recent, Path. And if you're not familiar with Path, it's basically a check-in system. You can share who you're with. You can share photos of the locations you're with. And now they were probably the first company that was caught with this. What happened was that when you go into Path, and when you first start using the application, it looks through your contact list and says, oh, who are your friends, your actual friends, that are using Path, and makes connections. Now, the problem wasn't that they were doing this, because that sounds like a great thing to me. The problem is that they were uploading the entire contact list online to their databases and storing it. Now, I didn't give them permission to do that. Naturally, I'd be outraged, right? And how are they encrypting the data? Are they even encrypting the data? I mean, every other day I see some company out there whose databases are hacked and they're storing information as clear text. No encryption whatsoever. I can't say that Path is like this, but I don't know that. That's the point. Now, thankfully, Path had a social conscience and said, I know our users are outraged, so I'm going to remove all that contact data from our database. We won't be storing in the future. And they issued a public apology. Social conscience goes an extremely long way towards building businesses. And this one's my personal favorite. Oh, man, I love this. Target. Target recently was in the news because, well, as you can read, they found out that a teenage girl was pregnant before her father did. Now, backstory on this one. Teenage girl started getting coupons from Target for baby goods. Now, her father saw, why is my daughter being exposed to this? And was naturally outraged and took it out on Target, saying, why are you doing this to my daughter? Why are you sending her these things? No, don't do this. And then he went back and had a chat with his daughter. Turns out she was pregnant. Now, was this a happy coincidence? Absolutely not. There are social engineers and data miners and analysts over at Target that came to the realization that some goods, when bought on their own, mean nothing. But when you buy them in conjunction with each other, they can actually develop a score on how likely you are to be pregnant. Bags that are so large that they can double as diaper bags. Unscented lotions. Multivitamins. You buy these things in conjunction, you might be pregnant. But the best part was that based on the goods that you were buying, and when you were buying them, they could actually determine which trimester you were in and give you an approximate date on when your baby will be born. Very close date, actually. Now, the thing is, when you actually are ready, you're getting ready to buy all these baby goods. You're getting ready to go baby crazy and buy everything that you could possibly ever want for your child. Their coupons will be right there for you, waiting for you. Now, this is the creepiest thing I've ever heard of, but the most awesome thing I've ever heard of at the same time. I mean, this is the future of identity and automatic social data mining, and really just understanding who your users are. So the book is Programming Social Applications. I'll be doing a book signing in probably around 15 minutes or so over at the bookstore. And if you want to contact me, my slides are available there. The book location is there. Take a look at the GitHub account. It has all the code from the book. I wanted to make it easy for you guys to really copy and paste. And you can communicate with me via Twitter and email. So thank you very much, everyone, and I look forward to seeing you.